Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. I am LJ, and Tweety will be calling in later on. I'm a little under the weather, so if I sound congested and you can't quite understand what I'm saying, I sound very nasally, I apologize for that. Apologize for that ahead of time. But we got a lot to talk about today. A lot of interesting stuff happened this week in sports. I just want to ask the people out there, for you people, you fans, experts, members of the media, all you people out there who last weekend were saying, and up to this week, college football, were saying that the ACC should reverse the ruling, reverse the outcome of the Duke-Miami game and get a win to Duke. You feel stupid right now? Or no? I'm just curious. And I ask that because if you didn't watch the game last night, Nebraska versus Michigan State, Michigan State was ranked number 7. Nebraska came in underrated. They beat Michigan State on a very controversial play. There's a rule in college football. It's in the NFL as well. I'm pretty sure it's in high school, but I'm not as certain of the rule in high school. But anyways, if you are forced out of bounds and you don't have the ball, all you have to do basically is come back in bounds, and then you're eligible to touch the football, like be a receiver. However, if you run out of bounds on purpose to avoid a defender, avoid being blocked, whatever, you, by rule, cannot be the first person in bounds to touch the ball. So that is basically what happened last night, Michigan State versus Nebraska. The receiver went out of bounds, came back in, caught a pass. I don't remember 100% certain whether they threw a flag or not. But anyways, the ruling ended up being that the receiver was pushed out of bounds by the defender and thus was eligible to catch the ball once he came back in bounds. And Michigan, that receiver, particular receiver, caught a touchdown pass, and that would end up being a game-winning touchdown pass. I believe they scored with 21 seconds left. So, now, one, it's a subjective call because you're sort of judging intent. You know, you don't know, you're judging whether the receiver was actually planning to stay in bounds or whether he literally was forced out of bounds. I know Michigan State fans out there think that Michigan State got robbed. I'm sure Nebraska fans will say he got pushed out. But my thing is this right here. If you think that the receiver was pushed out, why are these same people who were screaming for Miami to change, for the ACC to change the outcome for Miami's game last week, why aren't they doing the same thing for this Michigan State-Nebraska game? I'm going to tell you why, because it's stupid. Not those people in particular, but the thought process that you should change the outcome of a game based on an incorrect decision by an official is stupid. Because, again, most calls are going to be subjective anyways. It's subjective of the official, where they're at on the field, what they see, their vantage point. There's so many variables to what the officials call and don't call. Yeah, I guess you could say most people think replay makes it or attempts to make it a perfect system, but it doesn't because replays, as most of us who watch sports can verify, they don't always give you the best angles because the officials don't get to see every possible angle because they don't have cameras everywhere. You're limited to what the camera angles – what camera angles are available for the officials to see. So I just wanted to see, just throw it out there for you people who were last week saying that last Sunday and leading up to this Saturday, we're talking about they should reverse the outcome of the Miami-Duke game because, again, pretty stupid idea then, pretty stupid now. And I'm sure there'll be more chances, there'll be more opportunities this year for me to call you an idiot like I did today because you want to change the outcome of the game. Now, move me on. That was just an early show rant. I'm going to move on. By the way, if you want to join in on the conversation, phone number to do that is 646-668-2343. Again, the phone number to call in and join in on the conversation is 646-668-2343. Now, another interesting thing that happened this week in sports, the college football playoff ranking system came out. Oh, wait. Yeah, college football player ranking. I mean, college football rankings came out. It's this thing is stupid. I mean, there's no way around it. There's no way around it. This whole college playoff system, the way that they run it, my opinion, it does not meet the intent, and it gives fans false hope. excuse me. Let me explain why. Okay, one, it is still a subjective poll, not 100% based off the results on the field, which, in my opinion, that is what fans were trying to get away from. Being that whoever was number one in the polls at the end of the season was crowned a national championship, which is subjective. Again, not decided by the play on the field. So you may say, oh, this is decided by the play on the field. No, it's not. And let me explain that to you why. Number one, the polls play a factor in it, right? So as long as polls play a factor, you're always going to be subject to a human's personal bias. For example, Baylor and TCU, two Big 12 teams, have been in the top five pretty much all season. This poll comes out, they both fall out of the top five. Right? Does that not seem? They both fall out of the top five. They both were undefeated prior to the poll coming out last week. But a one-loss team in Alabama is higher than them. Does that make sense? I'd say not. I would say not. But because it's subjective, because it's still a subjective process, you have people who get in a room and talk about it. So they're going to, you know, they feel like that Alabama is a better team or their opponents are of a higher quality. It's their opinion. It's not fact. So this process is still subjective. Now, it makes people feel better because now they think that, oh, we're going to get a playoff and we're going to crown the best team. No, you're going to crown the best team that people, the College Bowl Playoff System Committee thinks are the four best teams. If there's five undefeated teams, they get to decide which four they think are the best. Now, the conference you play in also plays a huge factor in this. I know most of you all who follow college football probably have heard that there is an SEC bias out there. I would agree. I would agree that there's SEC bias amongst the media. And this plays into the rankings of the college football playoff system. Because why? If the media always thinks the SEC teams are super great every year, they start off with more ranked teams. Right, so if I'm a top five team, let's say I'm in Alabama, I'm playing in the SEC, I got one loss. Now, because there's more SEC teams that started in the top 25, I've played more top 25 opponents than, say, a Baylor. So when you look at strength of schedule or when these so-called experts for this college football playoff system who do this voting and stuff like that look at it, they're going to say, oh, well, Alabama has played a tougher schedule because they played this ranked opponent, that ranked opponent. When generally speaking, if you look at it every year, the SEC normally has a couple of really good teams, and the other teams in the SEC generally, they'll start out ranked high and they end up being not very good. Ole Miss, not a very good team. Texas A&M has gotten, I can't remember if they won or not yesterday, but the previous 2 weeks didn't play very well. They got destroyed by Alabama. got beat pretty bad by an Ole Miss team that, in my opinion, is not very good. Ole Miss lost yesterday to Arkansas. But two teams, my opinion, aren't very good, both in the SEC. Ole Miss beat Alabama. A&M was destroyed by Alabama. They both started off ranked very high. And they have just continued to fall and fall and probably have been overranked most of the season. But because they started off in the SEC, that SEC bias, they were ranked high. So now when these polls, this football playoff system poll comes out, the strength of schedule of Alabama looks like they've played really good teams. Because when they played Texas A&M, they were ranked in the top 10. When they played Ole Miss, I believe Ole Miss was ranked in the top 10. Now Ole Miss, number 24, past week, probably going to fall out of the top 25. I don't recall if A&M won or not, but they were ranked like number 18 or 19, somewhere in the low 20s, right? So because they're an SEC team, they started off with this high ranking, both vaulting Alabama, who's played both teams, lost one, and handily beat the other, vaulting them higher. You know, the playoff system is still subjective. It's never going to be the best system in college football until you get to a point to where the games on the field have more say-so than humans. I think the basketball-wise, they do a very good job of it. You know, you win, you can get into the tournament if you win your conference tournament for a certain number of conferences, and then they vote, or there's a committee for the remaining at-large bids. And I think they do, for the most part, do a pretty good job of getting it right. I mean, there's a few teams here and there, but they're usually teams that are at the bottom and that are not going to win. But the best teams, you know, normally in college basketball have an opportunity to decide on the court. And football is not like that. Then you can go undefeated. If you're not in the right conference at the beginning of the season, you don't have a shot. Iowa was undefeated. I think they're ranked number 9 as of right now in the football playoff system or whatever the hell it's called. Iowa's not going to get into the college football playoff. It doesn't matter if they go undefeated. They're not going to get into the playoff. They're not in the right – they didn't – their conference is not, you know, they're not going to get in. It doesn't matter what happens. They're not going to get in. So I think the system is jacked up. I think it makes people feel better. It gives them a sense of, oh, you know, college football is getting it right. No, they're not. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not. The system is broken, and it's always going to be – I shouldn't say always going to be broken. I think having the four teams in is a step in the right direction, but I think if they can get it around to 10 to 12 teams, I think they'll be moving. I think that's probably where they got to cut it off at, because this college football has more factors playing into it. Finals travel is a lot harder when you have guys who are supposedly amateur athletes. But we'll move on from that. You know, I don't want to keep dwelling on one topic, but just know that I do think that the college football playoff system is a sham, and I think the rankings that came out this past weekend, last week I should say, are just idiotic, and it just shows how stupid the system of this college football playoff system is. One other time, as I was watching the LSU Alabama game last night, actually before it even started, it all popped into my head. The title of this episode, if you've seen it, quarterbacks, are they less valuable in college football than they are in the NFL? That thought popped into my mind, because you got two teams, Alabama and LSU. Neither one of them have great quarterbacks. I mean, at this point, Harris is very young, or the quarterback for LSU, I think his name is Harris, very young guy. Coker transferred in from LSU. was kind of sharing a little bit maybe early. He started, then they had a younger quarterback come in for Alabama. But Nick Saban, if you look at it, never had a great quarterback. A great quarterback in the sense, I shouldn't say ever, since he's been at Alabama, he's never had a quarterback who you think of is going to be a star in the NFL. You know, when you think of Alabama, you tend to think of teams that win in spite of their quarterback. And I say in spite of their quarterback, not mean that the quarterback is not good, but they haven't had an elite quarterback. Sims, A.J. McCarron, Greg McElroy. I mean, you're talking about guys. I don't even know if Blake Sims is in the NFL. I think McElroy is in the NFL, but he's a backup somewhere. McCann played for the Bengals. You know, none of these guys are going to jump off the charts at you when it comes to quarterbacking. As far as, you know, even they're playing college football. You know, Alabama, they tend to, these guys play good, maybe a little bit better than good in college football. But, you know, they're not out here dominating games to the point to where their teams are solely built on their ability to play quarterback. Same thing with LSU. I mean, if you're not an LSU fan, you probably could name the last five guys who played quarterback for LSU. In all honesty, because none of them have been very good. They had the Jefferson kid, Zach Medenberg, who got beat out by Marcus Mariota, the quarterback for the Titans. DeMarcus Russell has played quarterback, who everybody, I mean, if you follow sports, you know what a bust he was in the NFL. Made a lot of money, though. So I think the value of a quarterback in college is not as high as it is in the NFL. And the reason I think is that in college football, you can recruit wherever you want to, right? There's a bunch of good running backs, a bunch of good receivers. You know, you have a certain amount of scholarships, but it's if I offer – I can offer one – if I offer a quarterback, the top quarterback a scholarship, I don't have to – it doesn't devalue the rest of my scholarships, meaning if I have 30 total – if I offer him one, the best quarterback, one, I still have 29 others. It's not like I have to offer, if I have 30 scholarships, I have to offer 15% of my scholarships. If I offer the quarterback something, it takes away 15% of my scholarships that I have to offer. So I think quarterbacks are less valuable because it's easier to put better players on the field at other positions. Because if I can recruit the best quarterback, I can recruit the best running back, I can recruit the best receiver or the second best receiver, I can recruit the best offensive lineman, the best defensive tackle, the best nose guard, so on and so forth. I think you get my point, if you understand where I'm going. So I don't need a star quarterback because year in, year out, I can go out and get the best players to put around him. But in the NFL, it's kind of the opposite. It's kind of the opposite. You can't go in year in and year out and get the best player at every position. So quarterback is kind of one of those, is kind of the one position offensively and even around your team that you can say, this guy outside of your center touches the ball every play. I mean, unless you point on fourth down. This guy touches the ball every play. So whether or not that player is good can be a huge difference maker on your team. I mean, it can have a huge impact on your team. And if you look at it, salary cap in the NFL, you know, quarterbacks generally are the highest paid players on your team, generally. Not always, but generally speaking, if they're your best player, they're going to be by far the highest paid player on your team. Because there's a salary cap. If I pay my quarterback a certain amount, that's less that I can spend on the other position. So I'm not going to be able to go out every year. And I can't pay my quarterback $25 million and have the best receiver, the best running back, the best offensive line. You know, I'm going to have to I got to figure out where I'm going to put my money at. So that's why I think in the NFL, a quarterback in the NFL is by far more valuable than it is in college football because, again, in the NFL at quarterback when it comes to how I am able to get players that take up a bigger chunk of the pie salary cap wise. You don't have that salary cap in college football that you do, and that's why I think NFL quarterbacks are more valuable in the NFL than they are in college football. See how much time we got remaining here before we move on. Okay, another hot topic. I thought about leading off with this, but then I changed my mind and decided to cover probably the two most controversial topics. Two most controversial topics in sports this week. So everybody knows Cowboys signed Greg Hardy in the offseason. He didn't play at all for Carolina last year. Who was the team he's playing with last year? Because he was dealing with a domestic violence issue. He got convicted of the domestic violence. Then it was overturned because somebody refused to cooperate. I don't remember the exact detail, so something so sensitive, I don't want to go out and start accusing people and not be 100% accurate or something like that. But anyways, NFL, and this his situation happened before the Ray Rice incident. My understanding of the situation is the NFL had full knowledge of what the circumstances surrounding the Greg Hardy incident, seeing the pictures and everything. So if you have been living under a rock in the sports world, then you may not know that this week the pictures from the incident involving Greg Hardy and domestic violence finally came out this week. They had pictures of him, some scratches and stuff like that on him. There's some bruising. There's some different things like that on the female. So a lot of people out there, fan-wise, media, people say the Cowboys should cut Greg Hardy immediately. Should be, you know, all this kind of good jazz. He should be suspended. One, NFL already suspended Greg Hardy, right? They have a collective bargaining agreement. The NFL did what they could do, suspended him initially for 10 games. He appealed the suspension. It was knocked down to 4 games. He served his suspension. All right, moving on. My thing with this is, if you have a problem with domestic violence, right, as a fan, supporter of the NFL, media member of the media, why do you need the pictures for you to feel a certain way? Right? So why do you need a picture to show you if the evidence as far as like the written statements have been out there, and it's been out that the incident was pretty heinous, violent, however you want to call it, between Greg Hardy and his female. Why do the pictures need to come out in order for you to amp up your anger? Like if you're against domestic violence, are you trying to tell me that you're okay with certain levels of domestic violence? So maybe if it's just a slap and there's no bruises, he can stay in the NFL. But if he beat up pretty bad, then he got to get out of the NFL. To me, that's what you're saying, right? Because you weren't calling for him to be cut or any of this other stuff until the pictures came out. But it doesn't matter whether the pictures came out. It was still domestic violence when it happened, which it has been out there. It's not been a secret. Again, he was suspended. He didn't play. I don't know if he missed all of the season. Well, I know he missed most of the season, if not all of it, last year for Carolina. So this information has been out there. Again, if you're against domestic violence, why weren't you saying this when he initially got convicted and it was overturned? Why weren't you saying the Cowboys should cut him or the Carolina should cut him or that he should never play in the NFL again? You know, it always amazes me what people will let change their mind about certain things. Again, I'm not saying I'm for domestic violence. I'm just saying if you don't believe in domestic violence, don't need a picture to make you outraged by it. I mean, don't let a picture make you outraged by it. I mean, it should not take to get to that point because he's already been through the court system. It's already gone through the legal system. So it's already out there. You already know what happened. It's already been brought about. You already know domestic violence. Again, unless you're telling me that you believe in levels. You're okay with some domestic violence and them standing in the NFL, but if it's egregious, what in your mind is egregious, then it got to go. By the way, why do people have a problem with criminals or however you want to call it playing professional sports? I never quite understood that. Why do you not deserve to be in the NFL? And I'm not talking about from an NFL ownership, coach, general manager, employer standpoint. I'm talking about from a fan standpoint. I never understood that. I don't get it. Is there something special about the NFL or professional sport to where if you're a criminal, you shouldn't be able to do it? Because why do you not complain about somebody working at Walgreens who's been convicted of domestic violence, but you complain about somebody who makes millions of dollars playing a sport being convicted of domestic violence? And I know you're going to say, oh, it's the money. Why does the money matter? This is about domestic violence. It's not about money. But you're telling me it's about money because I don't hear you complaining that everybody who's been convicted of domestic violence doesn't deserve a second chance. It's only the people that's making millions of dollars. And by the way, is anybody going to stand up on their pedestal about domestic violence when it comes to what happened with Johnny Manziel and his girl a couple weeks ago? When you heard her on tape saying what she said? Or y'all just going to let that slide? We're going to act like that ain't happened. Nah. Yeah. We move on from that, man. You know, act like that ain't happened. You know, that ain't no big deal in our lives. Moving on. Another controversial topic. If you guys haven't been paying attention, there's a lot going on right now with University of Missouri. I'd recommend that you get out there and read the newspapers. I'm in the area, try to click on some websites. A lot going on with race in particular and some comments that the president of the university made. Without going into too much detail, because I'm not going to say I know everything about it, I've just kind of heard about it over the last 24 hours or so, so I've been doing some research myself. They are complaining about racism, systematic racism at the University of Missouri. There's a particular black student organization, I believe, that's had a couple of meetings with the chancellor and the president. President said some things that the president of Missouri, not the president of the United States, the president of the University of Missouri, said some things about systematic racism that obviously, I mean, if you look at the video, probably did not sit well with the people who were asking it and the other black students at the university. And maybe even, I'm sure there's other people outside of black students who didn't like his response. Anyways, how this come, we'll wrap this around sports. Black players from the University of Missouri's football team have said they will not play football again until the university president is either fired or probably, obviously, if he resigns, basically he's no longer in that position. I don't know, maybe something we'll talk a little bit more about next week, but just something to, you know, get your mind into, maybe check that out and see what's going on out there. But I appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate you tuning in. Tell a friend. Make sure you tune in again next week. I sent out the link on Facebook. I text message to everybody. I appreciate y'all listening again. Hope you enjoyed it. See y'all next week. Same time, same channel. Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. Every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. 2 p.m. Central. Thank y'all. See y'all next week. Peace.